I will say too, I'm asked a lot of times, especially in women's forums, you know, how do you do it all? And the answer is you don't about things, but we're all juggling a lot of balls, and some of them are glass and some of them are rubber. And you have to know which are the glass balls that you cannot drop. They're too important and they will break if you drop that ball. And so, you know, my husband and my children are glass balls, and I am careful not to drop them. And so I feel like I can see my way around navigating a lot of those things if I can keep those priorities really clear.
Street Smart Podcast, coming at you from the 40 Wolves studio in Midland, Texas. Thanks, Ryan, for opening up the spot for us, interviewing Mayor Lori Blong today. So thank you so much for taking your time to do this. It's a real honor for me to interview the mayor of my hometown.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to have a conversation with you this afternoon.
That's great. It's a fantastic hat, by the
way. Well, I appreciate it.
Does Indiana Jones know?
I don't know. This is a Montana hat. It's from Big Sky, Montana. So.
Well, I mean, just because his name's Indiana doesn't mean he's from there.
That's true.
Probably is, though. But you have an amazing story from what I kind of gathered from it. You're native Midlander. Mm-hmm. Your dad is sort of, was oil field royalty, sort of, from all the conversations I've had with people about interviewing you, because I've been kind of excited about it.
Excellent.
And yeah. And I know you have too. You've probably just been losing sleep and everything else.
I'm super excited.
Yeah, I know. It happens. But but anyhow, I'm really interested to kind of hear your story, you know, from beginning to end to where we are now.
Sure.
And, you know, founding an oil company with your husband and all of those things. And he probably founded it with you.
It was his baby, and I've come in and helped a lot.
See, I threw you that layup.
I'm not going to
take it. Softball pitch, and you missed it.
He is handling things for sure. So I appreciate.
Well, you've got a few other things on your plate now, right? So yeah, but that's what's awesome is that partnership. They're able to work back and forth, and I can't wait to hear that story. So I normally say let's start where you were born and raised, but I know that.
Yeah.
So tell me what it was like growing up in Midland in your childhood.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born here in Midland, 1982. So if you're doing the math, I'm 40 years old right now. And I'm really excited to be serving in my hometown. And so living here through the 80s was rough, right? There was,
sure.
You know, a lot of the downtown area was last fully inhabited in 1986. A lot of these buildings that we see downtown around where we are right now, they haven't been full since 1986. And so that's really a picture of what some of those early years were like for me living in Midland with my dad in the oil business. My mom was a stay-at-home mom and really dedicated to me and my sister. I'm the oldest and I'm a younger sister. And so just my life was Midland. It was the church family that we had at First Baptist and in school. And I was in public schools, went to Rusk, Lamar, went to Midland Christian for a few years, and then SJ and Midland High. And so just had a similar pathway to a lot of folks growing up in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, same as mine. I went to Hillander until fourth grade, and then Santa Rita, then Travis, San Jacinto, and Midland Freshman, Midland High. So yeah. Very, very, very similar story. And I'm a bit older than you. I was born in 75, so I'll be 48 next month. Excellent. I remember in 83 time frame watching my dad auction his business off. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It was a tough time in the 80s around here. And oil and gas is what this community's built on and lives by.
Yeah.
So what was it your dad did in the oil and gas industry?
So he came out here in 79, 80 and took a job with Unocal for a couple of years. And then he ended up leaving Unocal and went to work for Henry Engineering, which is separate from what we know of as Henry Petroleum,
right.
Two separate entities. Henry Engineering was a consulting firm that was managing oil and gas assets for the Fasken family. And so whenever, at some point, they decided to bring them all in-house. And so he transitioned over to working for Fasken Oil and Ranch, where he spent the rest of his career.
Was he an engineer for them?
He was an engineer for them.
Okay.
And so he was deeply invested in oil and gas with them. He gave me a real love for the small independent oil company.
Sure.
And I know Fasken has become a pretty large player in our community, and it has been for a long time. But, you know, at the time that it was really formational for me, that independent perspective of living out of free cash flow and making sure that we're investing well and keeping a perspective of whose money that you're serving and you're helping to facilitate and steward. And so that was pretty, pretty formational for me as well.
So you watched him, and he wasn't an entrepreneur. He didn't start a business. He worked for a business. Okay. What did you want to be, though, growing up? I mean, obviously, you're in the oil and gas area, mm-hmm. but I would say at that time, there...
Nobody wanted to be in the
oil Nobody really wanted to be in the oil and gas industry, and there were even more limited options for mm-hmm. women in the oil and gas industry. So what did you want to be, or were you just like, well, this is what I want to do?
No, I never actually intended to be in oil and gas.
Do you know how many people I grew up here with that never wanted to be in oil and gas? And guess what they're doing?
Yeah, well, and I think my senior year of high school was, you know, trading at $8 a barrel or something like that. So nobody leaves high school at that kind of a scenario and says, you know, I think I'm going to make this my future.
This is going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So that was not my experience. I wanted to be at times a teacher and then really a children's minister was what I thought I would be. And I went to school at Hardin-Simmons. To that end, I went on a ministry scholarship and I was working in a church and was enrolled in Southwestern Seminary whenever I was in my senior year, and then met my husband my senior year of college, and he lived in El Paso, and that was, you know,
that's close.
Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth Hardin-Simmons.
How'd you meet him that far away?
A blind date. It was a really great blind date. Yeah. So we met.
Seems to have worked out.
Easter weekend in my senior year, and I was supposed to go to seminary, and I had to make a decision if I was going to be able to marry this guy that I already knew that I loved and wanted to be with. So I dropped out of seminary and changed all of my plans at that point. And so ended up getting postgraduate teacher certification, got married and moved to El Paso and taught school for 5 years out there. So definitely a circuitous route back to oil and gas.
Yeah, man. How scary was that, though, that you've had this sort of plan for your life and you meet the person that you're supposed to be with and your decision is like, well, this plan doesn't exist anymore.
Right. I think that it was a little bit short-sighted, and there were some consequences of that for me. Just the coming to a place where we were living in El Paso, but we didn't intend to stay there. And so I felt like we were just there for a year or two, and then we were going to transition away. He fell in love with El Paso and wanted to be there. And so there was this tension. We had also never lived in the same town until we got married, which I don't recommend. So some really...
I don't recommend moving in necessarily, but the same town is probably a good idea.
Maybe the same town.
At least 400 miles from each other would be good.
So it was a pretty rowdy first year. We have big personalities, both of us. And so
rowdy is a great descriptor for that kind of thing.
We learned a lot, that those first couple of years. And part of that for me was this crashing realization of I've walked away from something that was kind of my lifelong vision.
Sure.
The thing that I felt like I was called to. And I don't have a pathway to get back to that.
Well, and something that not only was sort of a lifelong pathway, but something you were achieving. You were being successful following this plan that you'd put in place.
Yes.
I did this for you, sucker. Mm-hmm. What's going
That's
on
right.
here? You know,
That's
kind
right.
of thing.
And so, and he kept saying, I think El Paso is where we're supposed to be. I think I kept telling him, if that were true, the Lord would tell me that too. You know, so
if my wife said that, I'd be like, I did. And then it'd be an absolute, I'd still lose that fight.
That's right.
We would have moved that day probably.
That's right. So we lived out there for a total of 6 years.
Oh, wow. So where did you teach in El Paso?
El Paso Coronado.
Oh, high school.
Mm-hmm. So
you just jumped both feet into that stuff.
Oh, I totally did. Yeah. I actually got my teaching certification when I was 20. So I graduated from Midland High a year early and then Hardin-Simmons a year early. I was in a big rush.
Let's don't flex on the podcast about that.
Well, it was.
That's pretty awesome.
My rush to get out and be, you know, I was ready to get going in life.
Well, it's an early demonstration of a lot of drive, right? And so you don't get to where you are without that. And that's awesome. What was your husband doing in El Paso for a living?
He went out there with Athletic Supply, which is a Midland, Odessa-based company.
They don't even exist anymore, ma'am.
I think they've sold, but I don't know, actually.
I used to buy the sickest capas at Athletic Supply. That was the best place to get them. The double laces.
Yeah.
It was the best place to get them.
Yeah. Yeah, he worked for them for several years, and then he ended up going to work for JDW Insurance. He became a risk manager and insurance agent for them, mostly a risk manager, and did a lot of work on both sides of the border. He was working in Juarez a lot, and so he went in that direction, and we ended up leaving there in 2009. So I had my first and second child in El Paso while I was teaching, and he was working for JDW. And then we ended up moving from there to Brownwood, and I told him, I'm retired from teaching. I'm never going back to that. I actually loved teaching. I love the kids. I loved that.
Well, then why did you shut that door?
But the drama and the difficulty of the administration and the just all of the bigger picture of what education was becoming and the lack of respect that I felt like people in the community had for teachers, it just seemed like a second-class job. The way I felt like it was perceived to be a second-class job. I did not feel like it was a second-class job, but sure. I felt like I was trying to assert my value and worth to people in social situations. And I was just sick of that whole
thing. Yeah, you kept trying to have to sell people that what you're doing is a good thing.
Yeah, this is a real career. Sure. This is something.
Was that in El Paso?
That was in El Paso.
Do you think that was local to El Paso, or was that, were you seeing that sentiment? Could you see that sentiment other places?
I think that there are pockets of respectfulness for educators, but I do think that there's a lot of people who see, you know, here's a real career path and then here's teaching. And I think that's unfair. I think that's inappropriate. And I think it's damaging to education as an institution in the United States. But I do think it was more extreme in the group that we were in El Paso.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you guys, 6 years, couple kids. You decide you don't want to be a teacher anymore, mm-hmm. and you moved to Midland?
No, we moved to Brownwood for a couple of years.
Oh, you said that already.
Yeah, Sorry. So we had, Jared has always had this entrepreneurial leaning. So this first couple of years that he was working for JDW and for Athletic Supply, he was always sort of surveying the landscape and talking about ideas. And we would, that big long drive from Midland to El Paso all the time.
There's not a lot to look at. You might as well talk.
We had a lot of conversations about dreams and just what his vision was, what my vision was for the future. And it really became what was kind of conflict driven early in our marriage became vision casting as we grew and developed and matured in our marriage and individually. And so I think it really became life giving for both of us.
So it's interesting too, as you grow in a relationship, my wife and I have been married 18 years, been together 20. You start those things that are conflicts, mm-hmm. you begin to learn how to navigate those and then also begin to sort of incorporate those. Mm-hmm. And in my case, a lot of the conflict came because she was strong in an area that I was weak in.
Correct.
And you realize, oh, that helps me if I embrace that.
There's benefit here for us if we can figure out how to navigate this well.
And so you were learning that, right?
Right.
You're getting through that. And so your visions now are starting to align. Mm-hmm. And at what point was it that you were like, yeah, I think we could probably do something?
I think, actually, he was helped along in this, and I think he would be okay with me sharing this, but the
he's not here, so you're fine.
That's right.
Yeah.
The owner of that of JDW Insurance was a guy named D. Margo, mm-hmm. Who went on to run for the Congress in the state of Texas successfully, and then he was the mayor of El Paso. So he's a guy that has been very successful in his own right, but he came to Jared at one point and said, I think you have an entrepreneurial leaning. And if you want to be here at JDW, then you have a home here. But if you want to explore other opportunities, we want to bless that and give you an opportunity to explore it.
Wow.
And that's an incredible.
That's rare.
It's very rare. And I think the opportunity that that afforded for Jared to kind of be released to say, okay, this is something I do get to explore.
I'm free to think about this.
I'm free to think about this. And so, I mean, they continued to compensate him well and give him office space and help him think through all of that. It was one of the greatest blessings of our adult lives. And we're thankful to JDW and to DeMargo to this day.
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a rare thing, even more rare nowadays, sadly enough. But yeah, the idea that, man, you might be a bigger thinker than mm-hmm. what you're going to be allowed to be here, maybe. Mm-hmm. But man, you're a value to us and we love you. So mm-hmm. go.
Yeah. And I think it set a tone for how we would deal with people. I hope that we've been able to afford some people some opportunities to grow and to thrive and to transition in our own journey of employing people and working with different people in different roles. But it set a stage for us to see how can we do this well? Mm-hmm. And we got to see that with him. So from there, when we decided we were going to reach out and start exploring this, from that conversation with Dee, Jared started reaching out to people we knew who owned businesses that didn't have a succession plan. He felt like that would be a good way for him to learn a business, get in there and do something that was going to be successful, really train with them and then become the succession plan. And so we successfully were able to do that. I think that was, to a certain extent, that was Jared's concession to my concern for the risk of entrepreneurialism.
All right. So that's an interesting point. So one of the things that's kept me from doing my own thing is absolutely terrified of that. My dad's owned businesses my whole life. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I watched him auction one off. I was old enough to remember that.
Yeah.
I remember running the auction slips back and forth when it would go. And I am constantly amazed by people that just do not have a fear of that whatsoever, to the point of almost delusion sometimes.
Right.
And I would say this, if Aaron Marquez were in here, he's that guy. He's all risk. He's all reward, no risk. He sees no risk in it, or seemingly sees no. I'm sure he does, but he goes anyway.
Yeah.
And I just have never been able to mentally do that. Yeah. I have tons of great ideas, but I'm like, well, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
And so you were more in that court. I was. Hey, you know, this is...
And you think back to my experience with my dad at Fasken,
right?
You know, and watching people all around this community have to auction businesses or go bankrupt. Or, you know, I had a close friend whose dad committed suicide in high school because of a terrible business situation. And so I had that framework coming behind me. My dad had several opportunities to do other things, and some of them that I was even aware of that my parents were discussing. And he, time after time after time, chose to stay with Fasken because he loved the consistency of it. He loved the dynamic and the culture of that. But he also loved knowing that he had a dependable paycheck.
Right.
And so that was my framework to come into this marriage with this strong entrepreneurial visionary. He's from Abilene. He's from Abilene, and his dad was in chemical oilfield sales.
Okay. So he had a frame of reference on it.
He did.
So just a lunatic then.
I think some people are just born that way.
I think so. I do. I think it's a chemical imbalance, frankly.
There's something wrong.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm definitely more in your court. And so at that point, when you're driving to Brownwood and you're having these conversations back and forth and you're like, I don't think so. How did he fix that? How did he win you over to the idea of, you know what, I think we can do this?
Yeah. So the family that he, one of the people that he reached out to with a family that we didn't believe had a succession plan, was actually my college roommate and the people that introduced us on our first date. So he had introduced them on their first date when they were in high school, and then they introduced us for our first
date.
Yeah.
You turned the favor?
Yeah. Several years later when we were finishing up college. And then... So this is her parents' business, Jim and Luann Blay. They had Abilene Plumbing Supply, which has now become APSCO. And so Jared reached out to them, and they said, yeah, we don't know. It doesn't look like Kaylee and Will ever want to come back to this business at this point. And so, yeah, well, let's talk about that. And we were there for a period of a few months before Jared realized this is probably not going to be it. It was a plumbing supply, but it was also an industrial supply house, doing a lot more beyond just plumbing supplies at that point.
What a great idea, though, to say, rather than just jump out here, have all of the, like, you're mitigating risk at that point, right? And so was his original idea, hey, let's jump out there and start a business from scratch, and you talked him into, what about if we do this? Or was it his original idea to mitigate that risk that way? From the jump, or was that sort of a negotiation?
It was a negotiation of sorts.
Sure.
He talked a lot about, in the early days of our marriage, of franchising different types of restaurants or things like that. We talked a lot about individual startups, but I think he would have probably done something crazy off the wall totally by himself. But I think he was able to listen to me and to hear my risk aversion and my fear, frankly, in some of those. And so I think it was a compromise of sorts, but I think he was excited to be there. And so what came out of that for him was this realization that this is not it. We love these people. In fact, we're still very close to their family. And Kaylee and Will have now come back and taken over that business, and they're buying her parents out. And so It was one of those steps in the right direction. It didn't end up being the ultimate thing that we would do, but it's a thing that we value, and it taught us a lot.
And also helped him eliminate that. Imagine if he would have just jumped out there and started a supply company and been like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I wish I wouldn't have done this. So it is a unique way to kind of sort of ease into that. Mm-hmm. You know, I interviewed one of my closest friends in the world last night, Dal Watson, who, Dal and I rep football out here together for a long time. Dal's a fantastic human, and he did the same thing with his insurance agency. Yeah. He sort of stepped in, and Mr. Crawford turned it over to him in 2019, and he kept the name. And I said, why don't you change it? He said, it's a brand, man. You don't change that. And he's right. And so it's a unique way from other entrepreneurs that I've talked to, but it's a, I think, a great way to do it, to mitigate that risk and sort of have the ability to figure out and almost in some ways omit certain things.
Sure.
At least try them out, you know?
Well, and I think that there's the traditional way of going to get your MBA and getting training in entrepreneurialism and researching all of these things. There's that pathway, but then there's the school of hard knocks, and that's the way that we've chosen to do things. Some years have been harder than others, but I think that pathway has really led us to the place where we are now.
No doubt has. So you get into the supply thing. He realizes this is not it. Mm-hmm. What's next?
So my dad was sick. He had cancer, and he'd had cancer for years.
What time frame is this? I'm sorry.
So he was diagnosed with cancer in 2008, 2009.
Okay.
And so this is 2011. He's been in treatment for a long time. It's getting more significant. Jared knows this is not it anyway. My family was super tight knit, and I wanted to be back here with him. And so we felt like we would come back here just for a little bit, figure out what it is that we do want to do business wise, and be able to be here to be supportive of my parents. So we came back. Jared went to work for a drilling contractor as their risk manager. And it was a job, you know, we had three kids at that point, and it was we got to pay the bills, right? And we want to be here. And so this is a good opportunity. So he was hired as their risk manager, and he had been there a few weeks, and it was almost as if that owner handed him the keys and said, don't wreck the truck.
Oh, wow.
He was just invited into a lot more bandwidth in what that organization was about from a really early stage of his employment there. And so he spent a couple of years learning that business and growing, and did some sales for him, did a lot of operations, really learned the drilling business well, and a lot of the finance side of it as well. So it was just this huge learning opportunity for him. And I'm staying home with babies for those years. And
then go back to teaching.
I did not go back to teach. So far, I've stuck with it. I've been retired. So, but yeah. So he's working. I'm doing a lot with my family and with my own children. A lot of work with Burmese Chin refugees during those years while I was staying home with kids, which is kind of my own little opportunity. We developed a children's, like a trunk show, basically a children's clothing line.
Oh wow!
And we were teaching these women English. But we were also teaching them how to sew and building friendships around that. And then we would have these trunk shows with our friends and sell these clothes. And then we'd make the clothes with these ladies. And so it was a little entrepreneurial effort, but it was also a huge ministry to these women and a huge ministry from them to us.
Was this set up as a nonprofit?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Had you ever set anything up like that before?
No, I had not. And I worked with Carrie McCain here locally. And so she really did a lot of that portion. She okay. had a nonprofit. And so this was a project of that nonprofit. And I was doing more of the teaching them how to sew, facilitating that, figuring out how we were going to get donations and setting up the parties and that sort of thing. So
you're party coordinator for the charity.
Outstanding. Absolutely.
Well, hey, everybody has a part to play.
That's right. Everyone needs a role.
That's right. Yeah. And so at this time, your husband's given an amazing opportunity, and mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of ways, I've been very fortunate in my career that I've worked for companies that have allowed me to just kind of bounce around and learn a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. So that's invaluable. So at this point, he's learning, hey, man, like now I'm learning some sales stuff, and now I'm learning the finance stuff, and I'm learning sort of how to run mm-hmm. a business, all of the pieces it takes to run a business. And was he at that time looking and saying, this might be the one. I might be able to take over this company.
I think he recognized a new opportunity in the market at that point. And my knowledge of drilling rigs is not strong enough here to sit here and rattle through everything he would want to tell you.
Thank God, mine's not either.
You can interview him about that, those particulars. But he really saw the company that he was working for was very old school. They were not interested in going forward with new technology on their rigs. They were not interested in fundraising for the dollars that it would require to upfit those rigs.
And well, it's not small dollars.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
And really, the guys that he was working with, they were towards the end of their career, they were happy with where they were. Sure. He saw an opportunity to go forward and advance. So he and a couple of buddies started with his employer's knowledge. He was not going around them, but they started putting together a really high tech rig, much of which now exists around. You know, it was technology that everyone was sort of beginning to explore. They put together a rig design, and he went to his employer and said, if you're not ever going to do this and go in this direction, can I? And they said, yes. And so I hope you're hearing, we've had all Dee Margo in El Paso. We've had Jim and Luann Blay, and we've had Randy Ford along the way give opportunities to him and to our family because he was straightforward about it. And it was, it afforded us the opportunity to grow and expand and explore things.
And those, all of those groups that you mentioned reacted in ways that are not, you could have anticipated that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just hope they react that way, but there's a lot of risk in even just going to asking the question, because you could just be told, oh, that's what, no, you just go now. Mm-hmm. And then you're no way prepared for that. So yeah. I think that that's amazing. And when you look back on your life, I know I've done this, it's rare that I recognize in the moment what someone's doing for me, but that's pretty overt. Yeah. So you probably knew in the moment, hey, these people are doing us a solid.
They are. And they've really been, all of them have continued to be friends. And Randy has now passed away, but just we've continued in relationships with each of those different iterations that have been really meaningful for us in life.
Of course. Why wouldn't you? I mean, then that's not an atypical personality trait out in West Texas, honestly. And I think that's something that gets lost if people aren't from here.
Yeah.
And so much of the workforce and all of that now, given the nature of the industry, they're not from here or native to here. And a lot of them come in for a shift and leave.
Right.
And it's great.
Right.
And there's a need for that. But it's different if you were born and raised here. You do understand the underlying culture of the community is one of really, truly generous people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So they say, no, we don't have any interest in doing that high-tech stuff. That's a fad, clearly. Like the internet.
Yes. And it was also a little bit of a gentleman's agreement. You stay out of our lane, don't poach our people, we'll stay out of yours. And there were a few things that were rubs in making some of that work, but this was 2013. And in that year, in 2013, we staked our life savings in this little startup. I had my third baby. I misspoke. I earlier said that I had my third baby in Brownwood. I did not. I had him here in 2013. My dad passed away in 2013. We lost three grandparents between us. I had significant postpartum depression, and our youngest had some health issues that required us to have to drive back and forth from Midland to Fort Worth every week from Thanksgiving to April. And
your husband said, hey, I'm going to go ahead and let's start a business.
Yeah, let's just stick everything we got into this business.
So he caught you at a really weak moment.
Yeah.
And there was no negotiation.
This was the time. And he had two partners, and we were going to make this happen. I was going to be supportive of him in bookkeeping and other things and some of the back office support. But the vision was to go and raise money for drilling rigs. And he did, I don't even know how many private equity presentations and
road shows.
And in the meantime, he was given an opportunity by Leroy Peterson at that time to do some consulting work and just to, you know, again, sort pay the bills,
bridge the gap.
And so that consulting moved forward, had a few other people reaching out to us for some consulting work. And all of a sudden we look up and it's 2014, Thanksgiving, Friday morning after Thanksgiving, 2014, and the bottom falls out.
Yes, it sure did.
And Jared and I wake up and say, praise the Lord, we do not own drilling rigs right now. Praise the Lord, we were not successful in these road shows and in all of these presentations. We have a consulting practice that's going well.
Right.
And we have no debt.
And the consulting practice was like for drilling consulting?
Drilling consulting. And then Jared had done some risk management and a lot of project management stuff. At that point, we were starting to do more bespoke total project management stuff. Sure. So there were some of them that were just company men, you know, drilling consultants on locations, but some of it was more robust project management.
Right.
And that was all going well. And so we decided we're done with fundraising for drilling rigs and we're going to go forward with this thing that's successful. It was not what our vision was, but it's the place that we're going to pivot. And so we were able to make that transition. And so we still own a drilling company in terms of, you know, we pay franchise fees on that. Right.
Not?
But we don't, or franchise taxes, but we don't, that's just not something that we've continued to pursue. The consulting practice continued to grow. And at our largest, 2018-19, we were at 140 guys in the field those years.
And they were all contractors?
Mm-hmm. 1099s. So we had a internal staff at our largest of 7 or 8 people, and then the rest were all 1099.
Just kind of running a body shop then,
yeah.
Not a consultant. So, mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting about that? If you look at 2014, the bottom falls out, that doesn't mean there aren't currently drilling plans in place, people drilling.
Sure.
That means they got to get better at it.
Yes.
And they need people with expertise. Mm-hmm. So, because you're perfectly positioned as a consultant to offer that. So, you're right. What a blessing that your husband's an absolute failure at raising money.
Absolute. It was awesome. It's the greatest thing that has
good job,
to
man.
Us. Yeah, that's right.
Good job.
So, we, in all of this season, especially 2013 to 15, I was in crisis mode, like meltdown, my whole personal identity. Really refocus where I was like, I abandoned what I wanted to do after college. I abandoned teaching. I've stayed home with these babies. And I think a lot of women in those early formative years of motherhood lose sight of their own identity. It's a common story that I hear from women. And there has to be something that helps you refocus on that. And I want to be clear to say, I love my children and I'm so thankful for those years that I got to be home with them. But there was something in me that shifted in those years where I began to realize I have something to offer and I have some things that I want to do. And what kind of started as resentment, I was mad at Jared and I was mad at my kids and I was mad at all these things for keeping me in this box. And I felt like I needed to do more, really began to do. I went to counseling and I did a lot of work just personally to say, okay, what is this that I really need to be doing? And in the middle of all that, Jared needed more help. We onboarded Energen as a client in 2015, and we had to scale up really fast for their drilling.
Well, we cut the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was in completions consulting also. It wasn't drilling. And so there was just this whole pivot.
It's like a parallel lane. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Jared said, I need you to come in and work. Just get us through this and help us get this done. And then if you don't want to do this, you don't have to. So that was 2015 and I've never quit.
Sure. Do you think that part of that it sounds like you were kind of struggling against your own nature, which is a driven and even though it takes a lot of drive to raise children
Absolutely.
And to do all of those things. It wasn't eating up all of your drive.
Yeah.
And so it was, I found any time that I've struggled against my own nature have been the most miserable times of my life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that you can see motherhood and even being a stay-at-home mom and respect it and honor it and be thankful for it and also realize this is not for me. And that's where I came to. And so, working in 2015 and then getting more and more and more involved in the business itself, but also realizing I love the mechanics of drilling and I really enjoy just the logistics of the oil field. And I didn't know that until I got involved in it at that level. I also didn't realize how much I really did understand. My dad talked to me about details of drilling programs and of wellbore construction and why, pumping unit design and all of those things. Like, that's not a normal thing for a little girl to learn.
No, not even by osmosis. I mean, he was directly putting that into you.
Yeah. And so I come into this situation with Octane and realize not only do I need to do this for my family, but I love this and I'm learning how to do this well. And so I mostly was on the administrative and corporate finance management kind of thing on that side of things, but I was loving the technical aspect as well.
It is fascinating. And there's no two are the same, but there are things that are the same.
Right.
And so you can apply knowledge across multiple different well bores to this one. And it's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. How at the time, so now you've transitioned back into the working world, but your kids didn't go away.
Right.
So how are you juggling all of that?
It was pretty messy, to be honest. So my oldest daughter started at Midland Classical, which is part homeschool. And
why not?
Of course.
Yeah.
And so I homeschooled her half time from kindergarten through sixth grade.
Can she read currently?
She is fabulous. She's a senior and she is onward and upward. We're really proud of her. So I was successful. I guess I was a teacher in that regard. I did go back to it just a little bit. Yeah.
It's the second time you've lied today.
It's the second time. Okay, I'll try to keep that to a minimum. But we, my middle one went to Midland Classical for a couple of years and then ultimately transitioned him to a different school. It wasn't a good fit for him. And then my younger one, he was in childcare and went to First Baptist, had a great relationship with their child development center there. And so, yeah, we were able to find good places for them to thrive and to grow. But that's looked different for each child all the way through.
I find it sometimes that is such a challenge, how you know, sort of scratch that itch of I want to do this, mm-hmm. but without compromising anything, or you're going to compromise something.
Yeah.
But as little as possible, you just hope you don't screw your children up. Right. And it's hard to see that. And I've made the comment, like I have a granddaughter. She's about a year and a half old. Mm-hmm. She lives at home with us. And I told my wife, this has been great for me because when I was raising this age kids, I was busy chasing the dragon. Like I wanted to advance in a company and all these things. All the things I thought were important, and they were important at the time, that I didn't have the opportunity to appreciate that.
Yeah.
And so now I kind of get that.
Yeah.
Also can be like, and I'm done. So. Yeah. So it's the best of both worlds for me, right. But I've seen others not be successful mm-hmm. with that. So it's great that you guys figured out a way to navigate that. Yeah. And there are some outstanding support structure things here in mm-hmm. Midland, and being raised here too, family here, that mm-hmm. helps.
That absolutely did. And I will say too, I'm asked a lot of times, especially in women's forums, you know, how do you do it all? And the answer is you don't, you do not do it all. And I heard this analogy somewhere and I've taken it because I think it is such an important way to think about things, but we're all juggling a lot of balls and some of them are glass and some of them are rubber. And you have to know which are the glass balls that you cannot drop. They're too important and they will break if you drop that ball. There's some balls that are rubber and you let those go and you let them bounce and you drop them occasionally. And knowing which one is which is important to be able to be successful, especially as a woman who has to navigate a lot of those things. And so, you know, my husband and my children are glass balls and I am careful not to drop them. And so I feel like I can see my way around navigating a lot of those things if I can keep those priorities really clear.
That's a great analogy. And you actually stole my question because I was going to say the question isn't how do you do it all? It's how do you choose what not to do? Mm-hmm.
There are things that I will probably go back to someday when my schedule slows down and the pace of life changes. You know, we don't have any hobbies. We don't have time for hobbies. We work and we raise children.
Hobbies are the rubberest of balls.
Yeah. And so those are gone for now, but they will come back. And I look forward to those days. But this season that I'm in right now looks different.
Absolutely does. Mm-hmm. And so you found Octane in the 2013-14?
2013.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 2013. And it's founded as primarily a consulting firm.
Yeah, and that's the only part that was thriving. So if you fast forward to 2018, 2019, we were at our peak. We were trying to decide. I remember asking Jared, how much is enough? Because we were at a place where we were either going to have to change some of our strategies and practices and revamp our business model if we were going to grow dramatically larger. We needed to make some strategic hires. We needed to do some things differently to be able to grow beyond that. Or we needed to say, we're good here. And I don't think he was prepared to answer that question.
I was going to ask what his response
was. Yeah, he's like, we're not there yet. I don't know, but we're not there yet. And so there was just a lot happening. I mean, you were in the oil field at that time. It was a crazy season in 2018 and 19, and it just felt like it was never ending. And
in 2018, 2019, you thought there's no ceiling. It's just going to keep going. And mm-hmm. and companies are scrambling. I'm sure you guys know different for how do we continue to grow responsibly mm-hmm. and able to service the customers that we do have without losing new customers. It is such a frantic time frame. And mm-hmm. 2018 is when I joined Wildcat. I'd stepped out of oil and gas for about a year and a half into the tech sector and realized, one, my skill set does transfer. That's pretty mm-hmm. cool. And two, I don't miss my oil and gas people.
Yeah.
It's just kind of my people. So at that point, I was getting back into the oil and gas industry, and Wildcat was like all the other companies. Mm-hmm. We were on an uptick, and we were patenting tools, and we were doing our thing, and things were going great.
Yeah.
2019, same. And then we know what happened. But so how were you guys talking about that when you asked him, when is enough enough, and he didn't have an answer? You don't seem like the type of person that would go, Let me know when you get back to me when you get one.
You've perceived me accurately. Yeah. I'm pretty persistent.
I wouldn't doubt it.
So I think that it was another place of conflict and another place of friction to say, I don't know that I want to do this business model forever. And he could see that too. I mean, he said, I don't know that this is it for us forever in terms of I don't think he ever envisioned abandoning it. It would always be a part of what we did, but he could see, do we get into an operating scenario? Where do we take some of these skills? Do we go back and revisit a drilling rig? Do we, you know, some of those things, where are we headed next? His entrepreneurialism wouldn't let him.
Was that something that was always sort of in the background with him? Like, oh, a drilling rig.
Yeah, I think it was. And I'm not going to say that it's not still there. I don't know. But I do think that there was, for me in that season, this is also, you know, in 2019 is when I ran for city council. And so I think that was part of my outlet for it was,
right,
okay, you're wanting to do this.
Yeah. Hey, watch this.
I'm going to go. And it was not in defiance of that. It was more, I remember telling him, he and I do a thing every year between Christmas and New Year's where we take a couple of days by ourselves and we leave our kids with family and we go away and just do some vision casting.
Together.
Just the two of us.
Okay, just by yourselves. Yeah. I thought you would maybe go separate corners. No kids.
No separate corners.
That we also go, doesn't sound terrible.
Also not terrible, yeah. But we sit down and we talk through what has happened in the year behind us and what are we looking forward in the year ahead. And so just planning and vision casting and really strategically thinking through things. And the Christmas between, I guess it was the Christmas of 2018. I told him, we either have to get deeply involved in Midland and invest in this community or we have to move because I can't stay here and gripe about things. And I am frustrated with some of what I'm seeing. And so for me, this is critically important. And
from a direction of Midland standpoint, yeah, you were frustrated.
For lots of factors. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a bunch of op-eds that the MRT published graciously for me in the months to follow about things that I saw that I wanted us to rethink as a community.
And was that your first idea? Like, man, I should probably get into the politics of the community? Or had you had ideas of getting into, you know, elected roles, public roles before that?
Never. And I had never participated in anybody's campaign. I had never, you know, there's a lot of people that helped with someone else's campaign, sure, or they worked for some person in Austin or in DC.
They've got some pathway.
Yeah, that I had none of those things. For me, it was more, I see this community, I love this community, and I'm frustrated about a few things. And so I wrote a few op-eds. And Jared said, he's like, well, we own a company here, our family is here.
Yeah, we're here.
We're here, so we're not moving. And I said, okay, awesome. Then I'm going to take that as an invitation.
Noted. Guess what, buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
and so by that summer of 2019, I had written several of those op-eds. I had joined a couple of community boards and the door was opening for me to be participating in some other things, but still politics was not on the horizon. And I had a group of people asking me to run. And that's really, I told them, no, not interested in running.
Be 100% what I would say. Oh, yeah. No.
I'm not interested. I just really, I think, I remember saying, I think I can impact things more if I'm not in politics. And I probably was right. looking back, I was not wrong. But I said no. And they continued to push that. And ultimately, I agreed to run. I felt like there was an opportunity in District 4 on city council. The person who had been in that role, J. Ross Lacey, was exiting to do something else. And so with that open seat, I decided to go ahead and pursue it.
So you run for office. Mm-hmm. First time you've ever run for office in your life, you win.
I did. Mm-hmm. And I think that was because of my dad. I mean, I think that I worked really hard too, and I'm not going to say that I didn't.
Sure, not discount.
I had his name ID and the relationships that he had helped to forge and his integrity in, sure, his own leadership in this community gave me an opportunity to have conversations with people that I wouldn't have normally had. Now, I had to bring the goods,
sure,
once I had the conversation, but I think I was able to get the conversation because of his legacy.
Absolutely, you were. And Midland is a lot that way. There are a lot of names in Midland that are generational families that are still, you know, one generation passes it on to the next generation. Yeah. And so if you do have that, then I mean, absolutely. And I love that you embrace that, mm-hmm, that you don't say, I did it on my own or whatever. Mm-hmm. None of us have ever done anything on our own.
Right.
And so it's great that you embrace that. And for sure, your dad's name, mm-hmm. people are like, I know Merritt. Like, even like I told you when you walked in, I was like, I know the name Merritt. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I've met your dad or know people that know him or whatever his name. So it did absolutely help. So you get in there, you run the election, you win the election, and then presto change in your city council.
Yeah, and sworn in January of 2020, and then the world loses its mind in March of 2020. And COVID
is your fault.
Everything is all my fault. Don't tell the rest of the world, though.
Don't worry. Deal with it. All 17 people that see this will know.
Yes, yeah.
They'll tell everybody.
But I do think that was... I didn't even know what kind of tiger I had by the tail in winning that election.
Yeah.
It was a huge learning curve. I loved the people that I was serving with on council during that COVID time. It was a brutal time for everybody. I mean, everybody has hard stories, but I loved the makeup of that council and the quirky personalities and just the way that all came together. It forged relationships that I still consider to be meaningful and important to me. So it was hard, but it was also valuable on council. But the thing that really was the hardest in that season, 2 weeks after oil went negative, we had 14 of those consultants that still had jobs. So wow. Think about going from a place where we're saying, when's enough enough, to 14 of these people who we cared about. I mean, we were close to a lot of our consultants.
14 down from?
140.
Yeah.
And that when I say 140, I'm talking about all of those guys for the whole year. So they weren't all working on the same day necessarily, but 140 different guys.
You had a rotation
guys.
Of 140 yeah. guys, that you, and now you only got 14.
14 that yeah. still had jobs. And so, like, we knew these people's wives sure. and children and their stories, and it was the most deeply painful professional experience I've ever had. And I remember Jared... You know, if you think about 140 consultants and insurance in the oil field, you can't service your monthly insurance payment with 14 guys in the field.
No.
And we carried that for a couple of months.
The professional liability insurance for a consulting firm
is
crazy ridiculous.
It would blow people's mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so the reality that Jared and I are sitting there like, how many months are we willing, or are we able, or is it even prudent for sure. us to just carry this?
The question, when's enough,
yeah.
is a different, it's a different question.
It's a different
then,
question
yeah.
of how sure. long, you know, we could actually do the math on how many,
sure.
how many weeks, months, you know, days of operating capital does this really logistically make sense
how terrifying.
To do? It was awful. And to know we love these people and we want to continue to work with them. And so what we ultimately did was called two separate competitors, and Jared said to both of them, I want to find these guys a good home. We're going to have to land the plane. Can you find these guys a job? Or can we just give you their MSAs and you continue to work with them? Because we don't want them to lose the job just because we are not going to continue to carry this insurance and this structure.
Again, extremely rare response, but... great problem solving.
Well, and I'm telling Jared's story today as much as I am mine. I was participating and I was there for the whole thing, but he's the one who had the foresight and the courage to call.
Well, he should run for mayor.
He should. I told him I'd give him a one for one swap any day.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
that's right.
But I think both of those competitors came back to us and said, we'd pay you a little something for it. We ultimately ended up doing a deal with one of them. And so they paid us a little something for those MSAs for all of our, you know, we were working for SM and Diamondback sure. and XTO, and we had all of the MSAs with all of the big guys. And so we sold those MSAs to a competitor, allowed those 14 guys to continue working. And we looked up and said, now what? I mean, it was, I remember the day where I had to go pick kids up from school, and Jared is sitting down in the corner of our office crying, like, this is what we've worked for and it's done.
And yeah. So you want to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's
yeah.
do it.
Yeah. And so in that season, we had some close friends. He had been doing some consulting work for their company, for a while, and they had been asking him, would you consider coming and working for us? He's like, no, I got my own deal. Why would I come work for you? Not interested. And so after that, he went back to them and said, is that offer still on the table? And so he went for 2 years and worked for them and ran their operations for it. They had really cool technology, industrial science company, basically. And so he helped to run that. And I agreed. And this was through much weeping and gnashing of teeth. He said, "You can totally do this." And I said, "No, I can't." But we decided that I would hire a reservoir engineer and we would go and vet PDP deals and see if we could find an asset for purchase that we would operate. And so.
So in the midst of all of this, he said, "Look, I know we just had to unwind everything. Hey, let's become an operator." Is your husband crazy? Just out of curiosity.
He's pretty awesome.
Hey, pretty awesome. He sounds amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to meet him again and remember it this time.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. But luckily for you guys, city council members make huge salaries.
Yeah,
so
$25 a month.
Right. So you were able to sustain.
Yeah, that's pre-taxes, like $23.49.
They tax your
$25. So yes, I.
That's hilarious.
I was able to successfully accomplish that. So the thinking through timelines, 2020 was when we ended up having to sell to a competitor. It took me right at a year. Of making offers and vetting deals. And I had basically said, I'm going to work until August of 21 and I'm going to spend X number of dollars. And if I can't get it done by then we'll be done. And we closed in May of 21 on an acquisition in Ector County. And it was I thought it was just going to be the PDP of those of what the production already was. 25 wells, and we were going to operate it and move forward with it. And so I did that, ended up with a different engineer, came from BC that had worked. He had been a client when he was at BC. We had done a lot of the drilling and completion work for BC for a lot of their development. They ended up selling, and so he came to work for us. And
are you doing all of this under the Octane banner?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is Octane Energy operating.
Right.
The other had been Octane Energy Consulting. And so we're operating these 25 wells and doing, you know, a workover campaign to get them, you know, cleaned out and cleaned up and producing more, and had the worst workover and fishing job. Like I still have a little bit of PTSD. Because I'm coming home crying and telling Jared, like, I don't even want to be doing this. I told you I would do this.
This is your fault.
I don't even want to do this. I'm not qualified. And, you know, I'd show up. I remember one day I took my kids to school and then I drove my Expedition out on the lease road to where this workover was going on. And I changed out of my Birkenstocks into my steel toe boots at the back of the truck and walked over to the engineer and said, I need to understand what our plan is. And, you know, we're standing at the back of the truck looking at different tools. Well, we can go in with this overshot and I think we can catch the fish and, you know, we're going to bring out this guy and Otis is going to solve it for us. And I mean, it was deeply painful we lost the wellbore.
Oh.
And so there was a lot.
And the worst is you don't lose the wellbore immediately. You've already spent the money for days and days trying to fish this thing out, and then you still lose it.
And I remember my dad saying when I was a kid that the best day to stop fishing is always yesterday.
Yeah, that's a great statement.
And so, you know, we pushed it longer maybe than we should have, but I had really smart. I was on the phone with Tommy Taylor at Fasken and with Jeff Sparks at Discovery saying, I don't know how to do this and I'm not qualified and I don't want to do it anyway.
And Jared made me do
it. And Jared's making me do it. Yeah. So now what do we do? And so anyway, we've worked through that and moved forward. And so that was 21 when the worst workover ever. And then 22 was when I campaigned for mayor. And Jared, actually, it was May. So we sold the consulting practice in May of 2020. We acquired the new asset in Ector County in 2021
in May.
And then in May of 2022, Jared came back on board with Octane and I said, here you go.
There you go, buddy.
No, not really. I stayed engaged and have really not ever missed a beat, but I was so thankful to have him back in there. And sure. 25 wells is not enough to keep both of us busy. both of us are pretty high speed and need a lot of activity, I guess. And so we started looking at what other things do we have that we could go and expand in other ways. And so we have consultants out again, but right now we're only doing that for companies that we're co-invested in. And so that practice has stood back up. And then in December of 2022, we acquired Cambrian Management, merged with them. And so we're contract operating for the clients that they had at that point. And so really we have these three facets of our business at this point where we have consulting, we have project management. A lot of it's for midstream companies and others where they need us to drill a well for them and then hand them the keys.
Sure.
And so we're doing that for several different groups, and then contract operating and operating for ourselves.
And I bet Jared's trying to build a rig somewhere. You don't know about it.
He better be telling me about it.
Yeah. Announcing here, world-breaking news.
Not happening. Yeah,
not happening. All right.
Not while I'm mayor. How about that?
Oh, wow. So you had to pull the trump card. That works. So you're on city council. You decide, what made you decide, you know what? I've had enough. I'm going to be mayor.
It wasn't really that I had had enough. It was, I care deeply about
this. I meant had enough of city council.
Well, yeah. I had had a really great experience in so many ways, even through COVID. As horrible as that season was and as difficult as some of those decisions were, I had really just enjoyed the opportunity to serve and some of the things that we had accomplished, you know, just projects around town and things that I saw moving forward. And so
In spite of everything.
And sure. Really, you know, we had a group come down that was an economic development exploration exercise, a group that came down from New York State, upstate New York, and they came in and met them for dinner. And I remember them saying, this place feels more like America than any place that we've been. And this was in the middle of the worst part of the lockdown. And Midland, Texas is going strong in so many ways. I mean, things were hard and the economy was struggling, but we were still open for business in Midland, Texas. And I really valued that. And so in the summer of 22, when Patrick Peyton decided he was not going to run, I didn't want somebody else to come in and be mayor. I would have continued to serve on council with Patrick as mayor. But when he decided he was not going to do that, then I decided I wanted to put my name forward and go for it.
When you mentioned it to your husband, what was his response?
He was very encouraging.
Nice.
I think he's been my greatest advocate, and he's pushed me professionally and personally, you know, just really to take the next step on a lot of things. So even in those years where I was really struggling personally and needing to go to counseling and needing extra support, he was the one who really kept things moving forward then. And the same has been true for my time on council and as mayor.
And that's great. So you run for mayor, obviously win. Mm-hmm. When did they give you the crown? Like
the crown.
When they do that? When do they do that?
January. I was nice. Sworn in January. And it was really cool. It was a great.
Was it weird? Was it like a surreal, like, oh my gosh.
It was surreal. And I'll tell you too, you know, we had it at the Bush Center, and there were people there that I remember from childhood, you know, people that had contributed in my life and my backstory. And so to be there and to have that honor, but then to look out on the group of people that had come to support and celebrate with me, that was pretty humbling to see them all out there in the audience.
I bet. And I imagine for your kids, it was really cool. Look, there's my mom. Mm-hmm.
My youngest, he's 10 now, and I remember I sat back down after it was all over, and I sat next to him and kind of hugged him, and he goes, are you the boss of the police and the fire? I was like,
can I get picked up in a fire truck every single day for school, please?
Yes. So that he thinks that that's cool. So.
It is cool. Yeah. And yeah, you know, my kids would have had a different react. My youngest would have probably yelled out like, she's above the law or something like it. It would have been something like that. Yeah. What my kids would have gone to. So yeah. Your son just wanted to ride a fire truck.
That's right.
Which you could probably have done at city council. You didn't have to go be mayor for that.
That's true.
So January of 22 mm-hmm. is when you were sworn in?
No, January of 23.
So this year,
January. I'm not even fully a year as mayor.
Is it everything you thought it'd be?
It's so hard, man.
Yeah?
It is really. It's been a lot. And I think, you know, one of the things that was really a priority to me was to be accessible and to attend things and to be out front and really say yes to things and try to be present. And I've done that. But I think maybe I've overdone it in some circumstances where I've not back to my glass ball analogy, where I've almost dropped my kids on some things where I've said yes to too many things and too many evenings, or I've said yes to trips that I've been required to take to DC or Austin or something like that, where this is required of me as mayor, but I've scheduled myself so thin that I'm not able to give them what I need to. And so I'm reevaluating a little bit of that. How can I balance this a little bit better? My daughter's a senior this year and I don't want to miss it. And
sure.
And you know,
you only get one shot at that.
Yeah. And so I have a senior, I have an eighth grader, and I have a fourth grader. And so we're in the thick of it in our family.
Oh yeah.
And I don't want to sacrifice being an excellent mayor and being present and out front, but I also am not willing to sacrifice my kids. And so figuring out what that balance looks like, I would say we're still figuring that out right now.
Yeah. I mean, of course you are. Mm-hmm. It's only been, you know, not even a year. Mm-hmm. So 10 months or so. Mm-hmm. But I have no doubt you will. And to your point about wanting to be more engaged and out in front of the community, one of the things I've noticed that you're doing that I've not seen before, and maybe it's because I didn't follow Patrick Payton on Instagram or whatever, but on LinkedIn for sure, and other social media now that you were coming on the podcast and mm-hmm. stuff, connecting, you're doing a lot of posting like, here I am at Goddard, mm-hmm. here I am at this function, whatever. Yep. I think that's so important for people to see that you're an active participant mm-hmm. in the community, but I do get your point. You can do that to a detriment.
Yeah.
And that's why when I reached out to you, I was like, I'm sure you get asked all the time. If you say no, great, but I would mm-hmm. love to interview you. And I really do cherish the opportunity to get to do this. When, as a mayor, do you talk to other mayors around the state about how they're governing and that type of thing?
I have some, and I think it's a thing that I ought to do more. It's not something that I've prioritized well. I would say that some of the mayor groups, you know, there's different societies of mayors and different groups that you can join and participate in, kind of professional organizations, so to speak. Several of them tend to be really liberal. And so just when you get on their website and you start reading about them, they're not things that appeal to me. And I don't think that they would add to what I'm trying to accomplish in Midland.
And not the overall tone of the community anyway.
Right. And they just wouldn't, it wouldn't fit. It wouldn't be the type of professional development that would really be additive to the community of Midland. And so I haven't spent my time there. But I do think that there are probably some best practices and some things like that that I ought to explore more. It's just hard to find, you know, what do I say no to here so that I right. can say yes to that? And I haven't.
I do have one request. So okay. If you ever get a chance to talk to the mayor of Conroe, Texas, mm-hmm. or somewhere in Montgomery County, mm-hmm. Houston, North Houston, get them to put a roses in.
Okay.
Because the closest one's College Station. Now, my wife and I will drive an hour and a half to go eat roses sometimes. We did it for our anniversary this year, and that's
hilarious. Awesome. Is your wife from Midland also?
Yes.
Okay.
Sort of.
But, so you both have to get your taco, your roses fixed.
Well, I remember high school, we had open campus, so we go to Roses on Andrews Highway, and we would eat a dozen tortillas and cheese.
Yeah, for $1.97.
Right, and if I ate that now, I would die immediately.
Yes.
But every time I come back here,
yeah.
I can show you my phone, I'll text a picture yesterday of my roses cup and my yeah. stuff and to my wife, and she'll just... It what she says back is not flattering.
You can't say
but I deserved it for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
But no, it's awesome to hear your story. And I know, you know, so Octane now, your husband's basically doing that because you have pretty much a full-time gig.
He is working a lot of hours that I am not working, but we are both working hard.
Sure.
And I still office there full-time. I don't know if you knew this, but you don't have an office at City Hall in Midland, Texas when you're the mayor.
Really?
And so I go there for meetings and I'm there, you know, to deal
is
with
that
things.
Intentional or is that?
It's been that way for several.
Just an oversight?
No, it's really because there's no space. Yeah. You got people stacked up in every corner of City Hall, and we actually have people split out all around the city. Different department customer service is over by Miss Casey's and that old Albertsons on Andrews Highway, and we got people in different pockets in different places because City Hall is not large enough. And so for the mayor to take up an office space didn't seem practical at some point.
Well, you have one, so
yeah. So I'm officing at Octane, and I'm there. You know, we have hired a new controller in the last few months, and she's amazing, and she's taken a lot off of my plate. She's way more high capacity than I am in a lot of her areas of expertise. And so she's able to do things that were taking me longer. She's able to do it more efficiently. And we have a great team. And so, you know, Jared is running with that. I'm there as much as I can be, and I'm still very much involved in the day-to-day of our business. I would say I'm turned, my attention is turned now towards, you know, managing the business from a higher level, but then also we have a couple of oil and gas deals that we're working on right now.
Sure.
And so I'm helping to facilitate some of the relationship development and that sort of thing.
It was a good time to do them. I mean, you know, the industry's going well. And to be honest with you, the level of work out here is going well. So, I mean, it's a great time to do that. So, so what's next for you personally? And then what's next for Octane in your view?
I think that for me personally, I intend to be the best mayor that I can be for the time that I'm going to be mayor. And I'm not going to put a date on that, but I think as long as I'm committed to do this job, I'm committed to do it with excellence. And so I really can't see past that in a lot of ways because it is pretty all-encompassing. But I think for Octane and for our entrepreneurial journey, we see ourselves as a couple of different things. One is that we think that the oil and gas business is a business of integrity. It is a valuable important aspect of life in 2023, and we're providing affordable, reliable energy for human flourishing around the world. And so we think it's a noble profession and we want to stay in it. And we want to continue to optimize it and do it with excellence, but we want to employ people in the oil and gas business. And so I think that will continue. I do think that, you know, we have an asset in Ector County that we'd like to see developed, and we'd like to develop it or we'd like to monetize it. And so we're at a place where we want to see that horizontally drilled, and we'd like to be the ones that are putting the bit in the ground unless somebody makes us an offer that makes us go away. And so I think that that's a significant place and a part of what we're doing. And then the contract operating space is an interesting thing right now in the oil and gas space. There's a lot of people who are making small acquisitions, they're holding them for a little while, and then they're divesting of them. And a lot of them are looking for places to help just operationally manage that production. And so we found a little niche there.
Yeah, and it probably doesn't make sense if that's the play to flip it to bring on actual W-2 staff.
Right.
So, yeah.
So we have a relatively small staff for the number of wells that we're managing and all of the number of projects that we're doing. But we feel like we're right-sized for what we're up to right now, and we love the people that we're working with.
That's great. And so then when are you going to run for governor? That's the next step.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I really don't know. And I'm not being coy. That's not a political
answer. You haven't been a mayor for a year even. So
it's a silly question.
If you had an answer for it, I would be like, okay.
Yeah. No, I do think that there are people though that they can see clearly the ladder that they will take to get to where they want to go. That's not my
You didn't ever, it was never your path to be in this position, but you drew that line in the sand and said, if we're going to live here, I'm going to do something for this community that I grew up in.
Yeah.
And you're doing that.
Thank you.
So it's awesome. What do your kids want to be when they grow up?
Not a politician. None of them want to be a mayor. So my daughter, I'm super proud of her.
Even if your youngest son could control the police and fire trucks.
He's out. The one day that they all appreciated this role was when we got to blow up the building, the Western United Life building. I got to push the plunger down and they got to stand out there with me. And they all three of them were like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Well, because it is.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Pretty awesome. So, yeah, my oldest, she is applying for military academies. She would like to go to the Navy, West Point, or Air Force.
Nice.
And so we have kind of in stages of all of that.
Do you have military in your family?
Not for a couple of generations, but she is very excited about it.
And my youngest is wanting to go to the military. My wife was Air Force. So, but she's broken my wife's heart, wanting to go to the Army because the ROTC program at Conroe High School is Army.
Yeah.
She went in Air Force. She's coming out now, Army.
Yeah.
And so my wife's like, what? I was like, hey,
it'll be all right.
Let her work the plan.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Who knows how it can evolve?
Who knows? That kid changes her mind really often.
Yeah. That's right. So yeah, I don't know where my kids will end up, but I would say that right now they would all say they don't want to be in politics and they don't want to be in the oil and gas space. So,
well, of course, 'cause y'all are.
So they'll probably just come right back here.
Absolutely. They'll come back. There's so many people of my friends that have gone somewhere else to make their fortune. And then they end up right here in Midland. And it's not a bad place to be.
No, it's a good place.
When I took the job at Wildcat, originally we were to move here and we were living in Keller, which is north of Fort Worth.
Yeah.
And at that time, the opportunities to do some of the things I wanted to do weren't here.
Yeah.
Or at least weren't affordable here. And so I was like, hey, Aaron, can we just move to the Woodlands? And he was like, sure. So that's how we ended up there. But if you're in oil and gas, you're going to end up in Midland your fair share of time.
That's right.
So
that's right.
But it's great to see some of the new things here in Midland. I read, you know, Bass Pro's coming here. I'm sure that creates, you know, great opportunities, but also challenges how you staff the store and, you know, those kind of things and how they compete wage wise with oil and gas. And that's always been a challenge in West Texas. And then, you know, this studio is another example of that. You have people coming in that are new to the area and they're like, what do you mean you don't have a podcast studio in Midland or a digital media in Midland? And and I think it's just going to continue to speak volumes about this community. And I think that Midland can get underestimated by people in a lot of ways. And if they knew just how much this community has helped the world, it would be amazing.
Yeah. Well, and the Wildcatter spirit is a real thing. And
for sure.
Midland has it in abundance. And so there's people who are finding ways to problem solve and innovate. And, you know, workforce challenges have been an issue in Midland for a really long time. We have the distinction of having the lowest unemployment rate in the state. And while that's a good thing,
was
on
it
its
2.5% or something?
I think it's 2.5% right now. And that's a good thing on the face of it. But when you start looking at what are the social implications? What are the workforce implications? It's staggering. And it really has limited some of our opportunities because we don't have the workforce that we need to expand. And so I think it produces innovation, you know, oil field innovation and just the technical capacity to extract oil with fewer people. If we, even 10 years ago when we started, I mean, the number of rigs that were required to produce the amount of oil that our region is producing today, I mean, it's staggering how much we have increased efficiency and we're able to do it faster and with fewer people and safer than we ever have been before. And so I think it's a great time to be part of the industry, a great time to be in Midland. And the innovation, I think, is still rolling out. We don't even know what to predict of where we're headed.
Well, congratulations on all of your success, whether it's, you know, teaching at Coronado High School, navigating and negotiating with your husband, who is clinically insane, like we talked about, with Octane, city council, mayor, raising children. The least is not the least of those, for sure.
I appreciate it.
So, and again, thank you so much for being a part of this and taking time to sit down and let me interview the mayor of my hometown.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate it. And I appreciate the invitation and the thoughtfulness to reach out and include me. So I'm happy to be here with you today.
Well, thanks so much. And I look forward to watching your journey.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks. All right.